Hello and welcome back, everyone, to another insightful episode of Artist On Air. Are your cold emails actually reaching inboxes or just disappearing into spam? In 2025, deliverability rules are changing faster than ever, and if you're still using outdated tactics, you're already behind. So today I'm joined by Magajé Sikora, CEO of Woodpecker, who has spent years and years mastering the science of email deliverability, domain reputation, and high-performing outbound strategies. She will share the biggest changes happening in email outreach, why cold email still is one of the best go-to-market channels in Europe, and the one thing you must stop doing immediately to stay out of spam filters. If you rely on outbound to grow your SaaS business, you can't afford to miss this one. So let's dive in with Magajé Sikora and myself, Julius Göllner. Let's go.
Artist on Air, der SaaS-Podcast für den deutschsprachigen Raum. Wertvolle Tipps von erfolgreichen Gründern, Top-Investoren und führenden Industriepartnern, die euch bei der Skalierung eures Unternehmens schnell und unkompliziert weiterhelfen. Zusammengestellt von Janis Bandorski, Julius Göllner und Matthias Ernst.
Hello and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Artist on Air. And today with me from Poland, after New Year, Magajé. Good morning.
Hi, hello.
Margaret, a very big pleasure to have you here. And thanks for taking the time. We are recording on the 3rd of January. So I hope you had a great and relaxing New Year.
Absolutely. And I'm so excited to be here. So that's a good start of a new year.
It's an energetic start, and I think 2025 will come up with a lot of challenges, especially in go-to-market. But I think one thing which is probably clear is that written outbound will still be a topic. I think it's quite clear, but we are giving a sneak preview already. Maybe you give us a short preview about yourself. Who are you and what are you doing?
Absolutely. So as you just mentioned, my name is Margaret and I'm a CEO at Woodpecker. I've been with the company for like almost since the very beginning. And last year in the summer, I took over in the role of CEO. And this is why I'm here today. I'm extremely enthusiastic about deliverability. So I'm upfront apologizing for all unreasonable energy I will put into describing those tasks. But this is just so awesome. So I want you to feel this, how cool the subject is. And yeah, I'm happy to share whatever I know about how to go to market with emails.
So I think we need to first a little bit classify what deliverability is. So I think for us, it's quite clear. But if you're like tuning in here for the first time, what kind of a KPI is it and what Woodpecker is doing in general?
Absolutely. So first of all, about deliverability, this is what makes your messages delivered to the main inbox, because the ultimate goal of anyone who is sending emails, including cold emails, is to reach the main inbox of your prospects, of people who are you are reaching to. And Woodpecker is a sequencer with a lot of powerful backends that maintains deliverability on the highest possible level. So we help to, let's say, untangle this whole technical matter, because deliverability is almost everything that you have there. It's the quality of your copy. It's your tech setup. It's the quality of softwares that you use. It's your domain, your email, and many, many other layers. But when I think about it, I like to think about it as just, you know, the whole universe that makes your message good enough that email providers want to put it in the main inbox. Because, like, if you would be a person in charge of, let's say, Google Inbox or Microsoft Inbox as a product manager or whoever, what do you want to have there? You want to have their only messages that are relevant to your clients, because like the rest is just spam. It's the same like with ads or with any other form of marketing. So we want only relevant things. And Woodpecker helps you to navigate through the process so your messages are relevant enough so someone puts them in the main inbox.
That's quite interesting, because I think from a very novice perspective, you push on the send button of your email and then it's delivered. And then by surprise, it either appears at the spam inbox or at the main inbox. So you say there are many, many components who has a serious influence on the deliverability. So maybe we can go just through the main components. You mentioned already a couple of them, but maybe we can give a little bit of context, like, what are the decision drivers for main inbox, yes or no? So friends, delivering your emails is as important for a sales-led motion than finance and cash is for growing your company. So I'd like to introduce you to our ecosystem partner, Float. Sometimes, as you know, there is a connection that really clicks, and that exactly happened when we met Yannis and Cedric back in 2022 at a kitesurfing event. Since then, Float has been an incredible partner for artists on the events, on the summit, but also all year around. Float is a game changer for funding SaaS businesses. No matter the occasion, whether you're looking to extend your runway or invest in growth, they've got flexible funding options for all your needs. What I appreciate most about Float is how straightforward they are. Onboarding is simple and you get access to credit lines you can use as needed. You only pay for what you actually use, so there's no extra cost hanging over you. Plus, they make the funding experience personal. You're talking to real people, not just dealing with automated systems. If you're looking for a funding partner that truly understands your needs, talk to Float. Meet Yannis, Cedric, and the crew at one of our local events or the Artist Summit in October, or contact Yannis directly at yannis@gofloat.io. Also, be sure to visit gofloat.io and try out their calculator to play around with your options. Here, we now continue with the podcast.
Absolutely. So the first is technical layer. It's always there. And it's like, when you set up your domain, there are certain things you should set up. It's like SPF, DKIM, DMARC. So there are like tech records that basically say to anti-spam filters and your recipient, hey, this guy is sending from like legit source. There is a connection between mailbox and domain. So this is the tech layer. It includes also like IP quality, the history of your domain from which you sent, and so on and so forth. Then you have the whole aspect of what you sent. So basically, spam words, quality of your copy, but also how your copy brings up the reaction. So like, let's think about it from that perspective. If you focus a lot on yourself in sending cold emails, so like you to I ratio is like, I talk about myself, not about you. And then you target people who are busy, who like limit their time and so on and so forth. And what you do is like, you tell your story instead of focusing on how you can help. The possibility that they will have some positive emotions up front is very low. So this is also deliverability. Because, you know, we love to hear how people can help us, but we not necessarily want to read success stories with a morning coffee of people we don't know and we don't know why they reach out to us. And regardless how cruel it sounds, you know, if someone comes to you and say like, hey, I can solve two of your problems, are you interested? And those are actually your problems. You're like, hey, this guy knows me. Like, that's cool. And when you start like, hey, you know, this year I have reached the double quota of my sales. Do you want me to do this for you? Because I'm so awesome and this and that. That's just like, yeah, I get it, but maybe not now, maybe at some other time. So U to I ratio is extremely important. And then you have the whole layer to whom you send. So, you know, if you purchase list or you use scrapers or you just use prospecting softwares, it's extremely important to validate. Okay. So if you have a list, you should take care of getting rid of all spam traps, emails that could not be delivered, catch-alls and stuff like this. So those are like three main fillers, let's say, for deliverability. But of course, there is much more and you can like go down to detail in every of these areas.
So, I mean, U to I ratio is interesting because, of course, this is something which in sales you learn as a basic, more from a psychological perspective. Don't talk about yourself. Let the customer talk. But you are saying this is also a very important KPI in terms of really evaluating your outbound messages, yeah?
Absolutely. So physically, sometimes when I read messages, when someone sends me cold emails, say like, hey, is it a good copy? I just physically count. You used 10 times I and only three references to the prospect. Like how the person may feel relevant to you if like 70% of the time you talk about yourself. You know, it's psychological, but then it's true. It's the same like if we sit in a cafe and like we're supposed to know each other because cold emailing is a bit like a first date. I hate the comparison, but it is a bit like this. And you know, your date is talking only about themselves, like you're gonna like do the second date. I'm not that sure about that.
it's first dating on scale, yeah? Like if email outbounding, it's dating on scale. Okay, but I got the point and quite interesting to hear. I mean, there is, from my perception, also in the media, the topic was quite hot during the last months, yeah? So there were a lot of announcements from big players that they are changing their algorithms of email inboxes. Maybe you can give us a little bit of an insight. What is currently going on in deliverability discussion? What are the trends? What are the big email providers doing right now?
Absolutely. So first of all, there was a lot of change in 2024. And I think 2025 will be like, you know, the gradual increase of standards, which is good news and bad news at the same time. Good news is that main inboxes will be less crowded, because email providers will cut the fluff and, you know, the not relevant messages and stuff like this. But at the same time, you will also see more challenge if you want to physically reach out to the main inbox. So, you know, you need to look at it from these two perspectives. Definitely employing AI and all stuffs that are there that affect how smart anti-spam filters can be will play a role. So it means micro ICPs and focusing on the targeted audience and understanding it would be the most crucial part that we can do. Because with deliverability, I think one important stuff is that there's no silver bullet. There's never been a silver bullet, and I don't believe there will be. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter how good inbox placement tests you do, like, or how good performance evaluation you will do with third-party provider. You can do whatever you want, but you will never be able to imitate real-time sending to like people who can react in different ways. Is not possible to imitate that, because there's too many variables and there is too many change in the environment. So actually the best way is observe and adjust if needed and send on smaller groups. So in terms like if you have an ICP, I doubt that you can have an ICP that contains 100,000 people, because that would be like extremely rare to have this kind of homogeneous group in business.
Absolutely.
So, you know, the more gradual you send, the more you focus on the person, less chance you get that someone will click this is a spam or mark a spam button. And after that, you are also getting bigger chances that your sending will stay healthy over time. And right now, like, I think this year we have the cheapest data that we can have and the biggest tech support overall in the market that we can have. Like when I compare what we have now, then what we have like 5 or 8 years ago, that's crazy. Like none of this was available back then. So I know that we tend to think, oh, it becomes more and more difficult. And yeah, of course, it becomes more and more difficult, but you have more and more armor to defend against that. So it's just a matter of just, you know, really focusing what is your business and how you want to go to market with whatever you have.
Let's get into detail there a little bit more, Margaret, because what do we have now that we didn't have like 5-6 years ago? I mean, from my perception, in general, data got way more cheaper. Yeah, so we're coming from subscription-based data provision from EchoBot-like companies who charged you €5,000 a month to now on-demand data payments, which are way, way, way lower. But what else changed? If you said, okay, we have many weapons available now for very cheap prices. What changed?
So you have the whole context data aspect, not only buying data itself, but, you know, with softwares like Clay or Persona, you can do the whole background building with the context, how to reach out in a relevant way. And they are like the waterfalls that you have there are massive. So you mm-hmm. have this. So it's like, I remember people doing it manually back then. So
yes.
It took a lot of like time and, you know, and money to basically build the context, and contextual data were crazy expensive. So you have this, you have easily available mailboxes on scale. So right now, if your domain burns or your mailbox burns, you can easily buy it on scale. Like, for example, we partner with Mail.do, so you can buy directly scalable mailboxes there and domains, and extremely cheap, super easy. And you get it, just plug it into warm up and send it out. So you have this, all of these automations that are out there. Plus, you have way much more support in terms of copywriting. Because, you know, I'm not talking about only ChatGPT, because it can be as great and as horrible as it gets.
Yes.
But you have, you know, you have Lavender, you have Twine, you have many other softwares that helps you to do decent copy And with like A/B testing features, it basically you can come up with a new content idea every week. And it doesn't cost your team to do brainstorming and just, you know, figuring out. So I would say there is really a lot of that. And the only thing that stays like non-automated in terms like there is no silver bullet, as I mentioned, is deliverability itself, because it contains so many variables that you can automate some parts of it, like, for example, removing spam words or doing your copy shorter. But you can't make sure that it's delivered to the main inbox. You can always try different variables out there.
So many interesting points to focus on and shoot the next question, Margarete. So maybe let me first clarify some of the things you said in terms of questioning. You said, okay, you can easily buy mailboxes on scale or who are working on scale. What do you mean with this? Because as a normal user, you would say, okay, I have my own inbox. I have my own mailbox. I will send emails from there. So what is she talking about?
Absolutely. So when you start outbound, most likely you don't want to do it from your main domain. I mean, the risk is real. So you need to have some kind of setup to start.
Why not? And let's say, then, like, why would I not do it from my main domain? Just to also clarify this.
Sure. Because if you burn it and you have a domain that costs a lot of money, you have just burned very expensive asset. And it can affect, you know, how your web page is ranked, how messages that you send manually to other people are getting delivered. So when you burn your main domain, like you put basically your day-to-day communication in risk. And it's like, it's hardly possible right now to do outbound from one domain if you really want to reach some scale. So you will need more than one. So this one domain that you use for your business, it doesn't change that much, and it places some risks that you may regret in the future.
And burning means like, okay, it's detected as kind of a spam domain, and then you got ranked down for all other normal communication as well and face serious problems. I get right.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
This is a little bit like what's the risk, the downside of mail automation. And so you recommend to use secondary domains if you really want to do outbound on scale.
Yeah, exactly. So I would leave your main domain saved for communication that is direct and just like to keep your business aside from potential flaws that may happen. And currently we recommend if you have one domain to have maximum of 5 mailboxes on the domain. Mm-hmm. And from each mailbox, I would recommend nowadays to send up to 20 messages a day. So it means with one domain and 5 mailboxes, you will not reach some kind of like dramatic scale. You will need a couple of domains and 50, 60 mailboxes probably to have something meaningful if you really want to scale up in a short time. So it means your one domain will not make any difference. It can only do some harm in case it goes sideways. And if you, for example, use Microsoft as a provider, it's extremely difficult to delist blacklisted domains if you're registered at Microsoft. So instead of putting yourself through the difficult process that you'll have to go through, if that happens, just it's better to buy new domains and mailboxes and stick with them or throw them away if they got burnt and you don't want to invest in fixing because, you know, they are not that much relevant to your business. And back then, you had to physically, like, if anyone have ever bought mailboxes and domains manually. I mean, this process is kind of far from being exciting because you need to go to, like, domain registrar, select domain, purchase it, set up DNS records. Then you go to, like, your Google, Microsoft, or whatever you use. You buy mailboxes. You connect them via DNS, and then you have them. And it's like, it's a wonderful process. But if you have to do like 100 of this in a day, it's like, it's just, you know, it's basically clicking. And it's not always like it's not always so responsive. Sometimes you need to wait. So it's a nightmare. And right now, physically, what you can do with like, for example, at Woodpecker, you can just go search your domain, order mailboxes, and you get it like within 10 minutes connected to your email account, to your Woodpecker account with all mailboxes and domains there. So it's easy. You don't have to like really figure out the process. The whole DNS is set up. And this is thanks to our integration with MailDosso. But there are providers like this, just on like being on the first side, there are providers like this on the market who can just do particularly this process for you. So I think right now using or relying just on manually set up accounts with Google or Microsoft is like spending a lot of time when you have providers like this. And of course, you still need to do warm up. You still need to prepare those accounts, but you haven't spent 2 days on buying them and connecting them. So this is like sometimes I...
And from a recipient perspective, do you see any risk if people receive messages from different domains than the core domain of the company? Or can you just like also solve this problem by aliases or any other things?
So usually the safest way is to find a domain that is somehow connected to your name.
Okay.
So for example, we use woodpeckers.com, hello woodpecker.co and stuff like this instead of using our main woodpecker domain. But to be very honest, I think that it all matters on the quality of your email. Mm-hmm. So if your email feels very personal and important at the time, the person will not go into like, okay, so now I will copy this domain, try to search it and find out that on the webpage of this company, there is other domain and they are not the same because, you know, that's quite like long logical process to go through. Usually the good practice is just like if someone searches the domain that you're sending from, there is a redirect to your main domain. So it's not like a blank page or something that doesn't function online. But that's pretty simple to set up. And in that way, I think the quality of the email itself matters more than how close it is to your main domain. Of course, doesn't send from something like to random because, you know, that there are boundaries to that.
Of course.
But yeah.
Second thing you mentioned is something you called warm up. So I understood I can purchase email inboxes and domains on scale. I can easily integrate it, but then still there is a phase of warming up this kind of domains and email inboxes. Why is this important? And I guess also there are solutions on the market which provide you with already warmed up inboxes, but maybe you can elaborate a little bit on this.
Sure. So warm up is a process that helps you to gain positive reputation. Because if you buy something upfront, it's neutral, most likely, or at least it should be neutral. And it means that there's no history. So if you would start sending upfront and let's say randomly, you will reach out to the people who will send like, who will mark you as a spammer or I don't know, unfortunate coincidence that they will bounce, whatever else is there. There's a high probability that you'll have to throw this domain and buy another one. With WarmUp, it's like, it's probably the question who you will ask. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking how it will look like by the end of 2025, because I see more and more people starting to send with like super small volume and doing ramping up instead of just warming up for a longer process. So, that's also a thing I've seen working, but for now, I would say warming up, it's still a thing. So this like first initial positive feedback you get from email providers is extremely important to protect you. And the more of that you get, the more resistant you are, simply speaking. So this is one thing. And with pre-warmed up mailboxes, it's, well, you need to figure what is the best for your business, as always. But there are two things. When you buy pre-warmed up mailboxes, you need to trust that someone has warm them up properly as you're supposed to. So this is one challenge that is there. It's the same like if you buy domain that was used by someone else and then you don't know the IP reputation. It's always possible that there was some scammer sending from that and the IP is still assigned and there are risks that you can't foresee, but it's possible. So this is this. And the other one is like how close in terms of naming you can buy those domains and mailboxes because they are pre-warmed up, meaning that they already exist. So it's always the matter like if you want to send from something that is related to your company name or it's not that much important for you. And yeah, that's the open question. I mean, I would say for outbound, it's very risky to send something from email address that is not related to your business at all, because that looks a bit suspicious, especially yeah. For people who are becoming more and more aware about scam and about like how someone may, for example, steal your data or do some kind of harm to you if you trust for like, let's say, wrong people. Yeah, but if someone is wondering, it's always the best idea to test and to see if it worked for you or not.
You also mentioned, Margaret, that it's a time, or we came from a time where we really did mass mailings, yeah? So like high user groups and then similar email to everyone. Now we are moving, or it's a necessity to move into a time of micro ICPs, high individualization, high curation of information. This, from my point of view, sounds quite challenging because, as you said, you need first the data of the recipients, you need some contextual data. You need probably some signals, maybe even to individualize the messaging. Sounds like it becomes a very, let's say, human individual process, or you need a lot of knowledge in combining many, many different tools together to make this work. So what kind of abilities and skills do I need in 2025 to still make email outbounding really working?
Yeah, that's a good question. And also, I know that a lot of people tend to say cold emailing becomes so difficult that it's hard to keep up. But when I think about like how marketing looks like overall right now, it's changed a lot over years. So like, you know, even if you think about your go-to-market, and that would be like very short digression, but I wanted to say it, like that was kind of obvious to do some ads and to do some like content, blog posts, and then Google ranking and all of that. That was pretty straightforward. And right now, when you look from like objective perspective, if you want to know how to write best cold email, you will ask ChatGPT or Gemini or something else. You will not Google it. Or at least I don't see people Googling stuff like this anymore too much.
No.
So that has changed. And a bit like when you look at it from this perspective, delivering content to people becomes more and more challenging overall. It's not just cold emailing. It's the global change because we get more content everywhere. So, yeah. You know, it's kind of logical that different providers try to filter it out to something that is relevant. And first of all, when I think about skills of person who is successful with cold emailing in 2025, it's the person who is not taking stuff for granted because it will change. And it doesn't matter if you're SDR, you're a content marketing person, you do whatever is related to selling and just, you know, go to market. You shouldn't assume that if you did something for the last 2 years, that will be amazing and efficient for 2025 because technology changed fast and it changes now faster than ever. So we need to be aware of that. And definitely for me, salesperson right now, as a person with high tech awareness and with like ability to build processes on scale, but also with like this human factor, so that you can think about your prospects and your addresses as human beings, not just numbers, because at the end of the day, this ICP and personalized outreach is something that changes a lot. So yeah, it's a demanding mix, but you know, at the end of the day, again, cold emailing is one of the cheapest channels that you can have. So potential risks of failing are pretty low. Unless you have super small total addressable market and like you don't want to burn your contacts for like, let's say, perspective of regaining them in the future. Like testing out costs you a couple of bucks in the lowest, a couple hundred, but it's still nothing when you compare like how much you need to put on ads if you want to like do something really bringing you the traffic.
Absolutely, I agree. And I think there's a lot of potential and get to very, very good CAC LTV ratios with outbound emailing in 2025 still. Taking your answer, Margaret, so for, I think, a bigger company, it's logical to probably get some RevOps functionality in to make this working. Yeah. So, okay, if I have a big sales team and they should focus on selling, then probably there's someone in sales operations or revenue operations really designing and maintaining this kind of a setup, yeah, from buying data to sending it out. But I mean, we have a lot of listeners who are early stage founders, like restricted resources, you know, like founder-led sales, maybe founder sales even. So how should they access this kind of complexity? What would be your recommendation for like early stage, still early stage C-levels and founders?
So I would say either of two ways. You can try to do it yourself. It's not undoable. There's like a lot of good resources online. There are free courses. There's like really a lot of knowledge if you are in a position that you want to do it yourself and you want to learn the process. That's one thing. Or you can try to support yourself at early stages with a lead generation agency that is doing that for like overhead fee. Because that can work efficiently both ways. And then you can learn from the person who's living basically from doing cold outbound. So that's also an option. I think that a lot of founders at early stages is ignoring that option. But actually, you know, taking up someone from the market who is specializing in this field for like even a quarter, just to see how the process works and just testing out a few things, it will give you the, like the knowledge about the tech stack. You can then just stay with the whatever they were doing within your organization and continue this unless you have some kind of like twists to do and stuff like this. But you know, that's another option. But I would say if you are at early stage and you're a founder, combining your, let's say, personal branding with cold emailing and doing it yourself, it's also something that will give you the understanding of the market. Because if you don't know how to construct a message that will be telling enough to your audience,
yeah,
it's something that you should learn as early as you can. Because sending cold email is not that different from, you know, posting on LinkedIn and doing YouTube videos, because you need to be aware what is your core message. So what is the key value that you're selling to the people? And I think, at least from my perspective, I still try to do cold emailing from time to time. And it's refreshing when you see how it works or how you fail, because it gives you the feedback about, like, you know, what should be better out there. So I would say it's worth testing. It's absolutely doable internally. Majority of like providers, as for example, we at Woodworker, we have support that can help you to figure if you can't do it from like tech process yourself. But there are also people out there on the market, great specialists who can help you to figure out. And it's from what I know currently, you can do it in a way that it will be based mostly on the percentage of like interested people and let's say hot leads. So you can manage this on a lower budget as well. It's not undoable.
Another challenge I'm seeing with email outbound is that the big social networks, business networks like LinkedIn are growing still fast, even in on a high scale, big scale. And of course, if you take a look on my inbox, messaging also on these platforms is massively increasing, Margaret. And also like the professionalism of the message inbox is increasing. So I, for a couple of months now, have an inbox which is called, I think, Sonstiges in German, so others. Mm-hmm. And the inbox is learning more and more which kind of messages go there, which messages go to my main inbox. So I kind of an inbox filter on LinkedIn now. What's your view on communication shifting from email to LinkedIn? And I guess, of course, it's depending on ICPs, but what's your general view on it?
Yeah, so definitely there is some type of a shift, but LinkedIn is a bit different than emailing in terms of a very simple thing. Like, you know, all these memes with someone sending you connection request with a note. So like, then there's like just a guy jumping out from the back of you like, hey, and it's me. And you just connected with the person and the person is talking to you about some kind of business stuff without any prior connection. So LinkedIn and email psychologically, from my perspective, are very different, because on LinkedIn, if someone reached out to me and I've never been in touch with the person, we are not connected, I've never seen the content from that person, the chances that I will realistically reply are lower than if someone reaches out my main inbox with something that sounds relevant for the period of time I am in. Because LinkedIn is very much about context, and email does not provide this context, because you don't have platform that provides the context. And of course, brand awareness and everything that is related to your branding helps. So if I receive email from a company that I know, most likely I'll feel it's like legit and there is no risk involved, right? But on LinkedIn, you have to really build the context for communication. Plus, LinkedIn is slightly easier in some places to do automations. So it means that our inboxes become very, very crowded,
yes,
with the content that is of, let's say, different quality. And with mailboxes, with our emails, we are somehow used to the fact that we receive different type of content there. And I think you need to put less pressure on email than on LinkedIn to be seen, for many, many reasons. And of course, it's not like you will have different cases here and there, depending if you like reach out to the industry that is not very LinkedIn present, email is better just upfront. And the other way around, if you're, for example, reaching out to influencers, probably LinkedIn is a better way than just sending them an email. So it varies depending on the group that you're reaching out. But I feel like LinkedIn is a bit like if you have a stranger on a concert with like hell of a lot of people coming to you and trying to talk to you, and you don't know the person, you are a bit suspicious. And email is like more something that you expect, that you will have messages from people you don't know there, and you don't feel that much insecure about how it looks like and how we feel about it. And of course, that's my theory, so I have no scientific research on that. But we need to remember that LinkedIn is extremely crowded right now.
I love your analogies, Margaret. It's very cool to follow up. I mean, and understood, and I agree to a lot of points that it's very different channels. I mean, you have a lot of data on your clients. If I ask the question not to choose between A or B, we talked a lot about multi-channel cadencing in the last 2-3 years. Is it still a big thing? What's your view on 2025? Getting people really to replies? Is it necessary to go multi-channel, to combine email with LinkedIn, to combine email with cold calls? What's your view on this?
So it will depend on the targeted group, but I would say, at least for what we choose at Woodpecker and what I believe works in many, many ways, is to focus on building branding and brand awareness on LinkedIn and becoming like available to people and just, you know, making connections. And then it becomes easier for your cold email cadences to perform well. But I would say we are running out of the phase when we have like email, direct message, email, call sequences. Mm-hmm. I would say it should be also nurtured more in perspective of like where your prospects are present, because it's extremely easy to create a flow that is not coherent. So like between messages, because the upfront assumption was that the person reads everything. And that's unfortunately not true. The person does not reply, does not see your text messages, and is not checking your DMs on LinkedIn or connection requests. So I would say safest way is to like try to figure, okay, where my particular group that I am addressing right now is present, mm-hmm. and maybe reaching out to them like on LinkedIn with connection requests and doing some upfront work, and then moving to sequence on emails, and then going back is safest way, because I've seen many campaigns connecting LinkedIn and email, and it was very visible that there is assumption that, okay, this is my first email, person read, then I follow up on LinkedIn, person read, and then I again follow up on email. But like, how you actually check if that happened? Like, are you sure that the person really seen your LinkedIn message? Because if not, you just create a flow of incoherent messages. Yeah. And then you don't know if you always reach out as if this is the first time you're reaching out. So, you know, with CTA, the value and stuff like this, because if the person reads, it becomes too crowded and you like it, then you look automated because you keep repeating yourself. So there is a lot more layers than just like, hey, let's do multi-channel because it works better. It depends on your ICP, really.
Definitely depends on your ICP. What about calling, Margaret? Is it something you definitely would recommend 2020 because the written channels get more saturated and more difficult to use? So would you at least combine it all the time with calling? Or as I said, of course it depends. What's your preferred view on this?
So cold calling, at least from perspective of European countries, is a bit difficult in terms of like the whole legal stuff, because with email it's a bit easier when it's written. When with cold calling, when you start your call like by consent clauses and stuff like this, like no way, people will just hang up. So I would say you need to be very cautious with how you choose to mm-hmm. use cold calling. For I would say IT segment, it's not the best choice usually, because like we are more digitalized, more on LinkedIn or on messages and on even WhatsApp or Slack. Yeah. Than on calling. But I know for some, let's say, more hardware production related industries, cold calling brought like amazing results. And I see it among some of our customers as well. So, yeah, I would say it's one of the trickiest channels you can select. But also it can bring awesome results if you have a targeted group that is capable to reply positively to that. Because calling is also like this very direct way of communicating when you don't leave to the person a choice to select other time to like give feedback to you or reply. So the potential chances that you will get a negative feedback are a bit higher. It's a bit like asking someone in the first email to jump on a call. I think this is the same way of intimidating the person, because you are asking for like direct interaction, very like upfront, and not every one of us, especially now when we all work online and we can select like when we get in touch with people and when we disconnect, not all people are open to get into this direct type of conversation upfront. But as I said, for some industries, I've seen awesome results from cold calling. So yeah, it's worth testing with its own risks.
it's worth testing with its own risk. And you say it's not definitely required if you run email outbound to do it, which is an interesting information, I think, also for many. You mentioned like data privacy regulation, and especially in Germany, it's a, or it was at least in the media, a big thing a couple of years ago. I think GDPR in general and privacy laws is something which people are thinking of a lot, especially if you go a little bit more into conservative industries, they are afraid to do it. So how did privacy policies influenced email outbound over the last years? And like, how hot is it really? And how much do we need to follow on these policies? How much leeway is there maybe in doing outbound by email?
Sure. So the whole discussion was about personal data processing and consent. And the main question in cold email is when and if always you have to have consent. And when I'm saying it, I can imagine at least some hundreds of lawyers disagreeing with me on whatever I will say from now. But that's always the matter of interpretation and understanding some rules. But overall, cold emailing and consent doesn't work together too much. So, I mean, if you reach out to people that should become your customers, it means that you don't have their prior consent in majority of cases because of obvious reasons. So you need to have in the back of your head the fact that you need to follow certain rules that are out there. So, for example, that you need to have some limitation on data processing. So this retention period. So it's not like the time when you just scrap someone's data and keep it for 10 years because you forgot about it in your CRM or whatever. This time is long gone. So the whole retention periods. The selection of software here becomes extremely relevant because if you use any automation, LinkedIn, text messages, emails, doesn't matter. You need to be sure that your provider follow all rules. And because if you have non-compliant provider, it's very difficult for you as an entrepreneur to defend that you are actually compliant, just your buddies that do whole work for you are not. So this is something that you should really have in the back of your head. And always take care of information clauses. So like letting people who you are, letting them know how they can unsubscribe or how they can adjust their data or object from further processing. So there's a lot of layers, but I would say there's a lot of misconception and misunderstanding about how GDPR, what was the aim of that? Because the aim of that was not to kill the business. It's not like, you know, the big guys in the European Commission, they were like, okay, so let's shut down business doing from like 2018. That would be awesome idea. It's not the case. And also if you read GDPR, there's not like special section for cold emailing. So we were not important enough. I'm so sorry. But, you know, it's like a lot of common sense and a lot of respect to someone's data and giving them control and not panicking up front. Because I see a lot of people going like, okay, so these people requested to opt out. So I have to keep a list of opt-outs, but I can't process the data further. So, and you know, and you start to be in a situation when you need to remove the data, but you need to remember not to contact those people, but you remove their data. So you keep them processing every time it comes up because you're too panicked to keep the data, even though you should in this particular situation. So there's a lot of misunderstanding, and I would say no panic, just logical thinking and selecting wise who you are listening to in terms of legal advices.
Yeah. So I take with me, it's okay doing it. Be careful of some rules in terms of data storaging, deleting data, stuff like this, but it's still an interpretation of the law. And as you are also like telling it, probably that you haven't heard about many cases who really ran into legal trouble of doing this. So same for me. Yeah? Like everyone was talking about it massively, like crazy many conversations. But at the end, I haven't heard of even a single case where this really went to court because someone was cold calling or cold emailing someone. So it's good that you like confirm on this. I would like to end up the conversation with some really actionable advice for our listeners. So what's one thing listeners can do right now, 3rd of January when we record, to improve their email deliverability in 2025?
So if you send the same copy for more than 2 months, change it.
Okay. So you said, okay, if I send really the exact same messaging for more than 2 months, change it. What's the perfect time frame to use a copy?
So one thing you need to remember is that every time you send cold email sequence, you have, let's say, opening email and two follow-ups. Effectively, you give three times the same message because opening email is always quoted across all follow-ups. You send exactly same content to anti-spam filters. So it's pretty obvious that at some point, those filters will figure that this is automation unless you write exactly same message. But it's like they will just figure. So if you send content for a longer period of time, I would say some companies that are pretty good at it change it every month. It depends on the volume, because if you send like 10K a month, sending every month is reasonable. If you send like within 2 weeks, 100K, probably you should like start thinking about switching it a bit more often than just once a month. It depends on the volume. So common sense rule apply here. But don't stick with the content. I know it was awesome and it worked, but anti-spam filters will figure. So try to change it. And if you don't validate your cold email list, so like lists of your contacts, please do. Because that's the low-hanging fruit. You just need to have the provider who has it built in, or you need to purchase like a subscription if you don't have it included. But validate for catch-alls, for spam traps, for anything that is there, because this is something that will take you like 10 minutes, and it can save your domain and your reputation.
Good advice. Thanks a lot for this very interesting and insightful conversation. It was a big pleasure like getting deep into a topic which probably I'm a bit more far away, but which is of course super important for almost every company in our artist ecosystem and of my portfolio companies as well. And I know the complexity, and I also see that founders, especially in early days, are a bit afraid of it or make very easy mistakes, as you mentioned, leading to the point that the domains got restricted or like really ranked down. So thanks a lot. I think if people like to know more about you, it's an easy look on the website. And I think the best channel to contact you is email. But I also know you're on LinkedIn as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And if anyone who's listening want to know more about cold emailing, just feel free to DM me on LinkedIn. I'm trying to be responsive there. And I'm always happy to help you.
If you can give us some helpful resources, you say like it's worth to read, maybe especially for people who are starting it, happy to put it to the show notes. Before I leave you to 2025, Margarete, it would be a pleasure to get your recommendation for a great place to eat in Wroclaw in this case. So if you have any recommendation for our artists, if they are there, where to go and maybe meet you, please let us know.
Absolutely. So there is this restaurant called Moda Polska, which is Young Poland. Amazing food, great chief. If you're here, just go there. You won't be disappointed. And if you're in Wroclaw and you want to grab a coffee, just let me know.
Sounds like a modern Polish cuisine, I guess. Moda Polska, or is probably traditional food interpreted in a modern new way.
Yeah, sounds absolutely.
Sounds very nice. Count me in if I'm there. Thanks a lot for your time. See you latest in person in October as a speaker on Artist Summit. And wish you a great and successful 2025. It was a pleasure.
Was a pleasure. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot, everyone, for listening to today's episode. I hope you gained a lot of information and had some fun. And of course, it's only 2 more months to go to Artist Circus, so I'd like to point out and invite you all to the Revenue Enablement Festival in Europe. We've got 5 tailored content tracks for you: sales, customer success, RevOps, pre-sales, and partnerships. So whether you're building a scalable sales engine or fine-tuning customer success strategies, Artist Circus has you covered. We will have a lot of fun in Berlin. It's a Friday, so 100 speakers, full day of top-notch content, and then of course, from 6 p.m. onwards until end of the day, maybe morning and the night, we will have a lot of fun entertainment and also some competitive games. We know sales and revenue is competitive, so be sure there will be a lot of fun components at the circus. See you all around. We would be super happy having you, besides more than 150 teams already committed. So take the last chance, get your tickets, and see you all in Berlin.